In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 157. We are separated today, but John Senecal and myself, Brian Shackman here. I've been off for a little bit. I was in France with my daughter. I promised her for her high school graduation that I would take her on a trip, and we went to France. Today, we're going to talk about the Yankee struggles. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sox. We're going to talk about some trade deadline stuff. But I will tell you the one thing I want to say about my trip to France, and there's not a ton of baseball tie-ins, but there is one in particular, that the number one logo of American global sports that I saw in my week there was the Yankees.
Really?
Yeah. Like, John, it was not even close. It was the number two would have been the Bulls, and I mean Jordan must still have some sort of stranglehold on
right.
Europe, but I mean people, I saw Yankee, and they're not Americans,
right?
People from Spain, people from Germany. I mean it was nuts, and I'm pretty fascinated how they do it, because I mean, the Yankee brand, I don't think of it as like a global, like baseball's not that popular in France or in Germany. Or in Spain.
Like, I don't think it's so much baseball. I think it's just the Yankee, you know, going all the way back to Babe Ruth. He's like the most recognizable sports figure in history, with, you know, arguably one of the most. So I think it's just more of just the Yankee brand, not that the baseball fan. I think a lot of it is just, you know, maybe a father or something had the hat and was over here and came back. And next thing you know, two generations later, they're still wearing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're sitting down watching games, but.
No, I don't either. But I also think it might be because I saw a lot of New York sweatshirts, too. Might be just New York.
People right? visiting York. And that's what they grabbed. And they went,
yeah, and the city of New York is a global icon.
And they
right?
sat I mean, there and they looked at the Mets hat and they looked at the Yankees hat and they said,
Well, if they were basing it on this week, maybe they should have chosen the Mets hat. I mean, I'm pretty stunned at that series. But what I would say is, you know, no team's going to, you know, the Yankees weren't going to win 115, but at the same time, this sort of wilting, I mean, and they're going to have struggles. So it's not like, I don't know how worried you are, but why don't I start with that? Like, how worried are you?
Well, I mean, I've been harping about the three main things on the Yankees for a while. I mean, basically all season, but now a lot of this is coming to fruition because, you know, you basically only have two players that are hitting. You know, you got Judge and you got Soto. And I'll even go as far as saying that really Judge
Volpe?
Is the only. Volpe's doing good. I mean, he's doing what he needs to do. And I think he's kind of overlooked because Judge is playing so well and Soto's Soto, you know, the whole idea of having him on the team just in general. But
yeah.
Overall, you know, Judge is really the main guy that's just doing everything. You know, Soto is doing stuff, but I feel like teams are just happy with saying, oh, we'll walk Soto. If Judge hits a home run, he hits a home run, because nobody else in the lineup is doing anything. And if you look at the Mets series, I mean, the Yankees scored 9 runs, and Judge was responsible for 7 of those 9 runs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's in a 2-game series, right? It's a small series, but that's a sample size that has been the Yankees basically the month of June. I mean, it's been rough. It's been really rough. And, you know, you got no production at third, no production at second. Gleyber was just benched. First base is just a total mess. The bullpen needs so much help. And you get to the postseason, if you don't fix these problems, you're going to be able to work around Soto and Judge. It's just how it works. You know, good teams will beat you and exploit that.
Do you think, you know, like someone like Rizzo, is Rizzo just done? Is his career over?
You know, I don't think he's going to ever the same ever since he had that concussion last season.
Yeah.
I just don't, I think that's something that's going to linger, and then, you know, combine that with his age. I mean, he's still relatively young. I you know, mid 30s. I just don't see it. He's just not there. It's like he doesn't look like the same player. And then you throw Gleyber on that. He's just a mess. I know, in Cole and the pitching, everything's just going bad except for Judge right now for the Yankees.
Yeah. Well, so listen, and then there's obviously Giancarlo Stanton, you know, and you know, I think it seems like an annual occurrence that he goes on the injured list. And the question is, for how long does he stay there? And the baseball injuries are always like, oh, abdominal strain, 2 months. I'm like, what? Or, like, you know, same with Tristan Casas. It's the same thing with the Red Sox. Like, you know, and you could bring up the Papelbon thing, too, if you want, because he was trolling the Yankees and Stanton. But, you know, losing him is a big deal, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy knowledge that this was going to happen. Brian Cashman, at the beginning of the season, came right out and said that he knows these guys going to get hurt at some point of the season, because that's how it works with Giancarlo Stanton. But the problem now, this season, with him getting hurt, is the guy was actually being productive. He was being a contributor to the lineup. He was a force in that lineup. And in the past, he was just another guy that looked bad in the lineup in the last few years. And this year, he's actually kind of come together, and he's putting it together. And I say he's putting it together. He's batting, you know, mid-200s, but that's not the 220s we're used to. And he's hitting timely home runs, and he's a force in the lineup. He's not a guaranteed out anymore. And unfortunately, when you lose a player like that and you're starting to scuffle, it just snowballs. Good thing is it's a mild hamstring strain, but to me personally, mild hamstring strain is like a major hamstring strain to a normal player for Stanton, because he's always been hurt. It's just scary. And then the Yankees, they need production. And then
pause for a second.
What's that?
What did Papelbon do?
Well, Papelbon's been running his mouth for a long time. We know that. You know, Bryce Harper tried to knock his teeth out in the dugout when he was playing with the Nationals, but he just came out, and when Stanton went on the IL, this is what Papelbon said. He tweeted, "Finally, Stanton goes on the IL. This is what my under is. Under in his HR total for the year needed. I knew he couldn't go all year without landing on the IL. Is this 8-9 years in a row? ? Take your time, Mike. I mean, Giancarlos. Don't need to rush back."
Is that a reference to Mike Stanton? I don't get that part.
Yeah, that's a reference to Mike Stanton. And then he said Giancarlos, which that's not even his full name. So he's just, I mean, he's being Papelbon. I don't know if this guy does this because he's just a head case, or he just does it because he wants attention and keep his name out there. What do you think?
I think it's both. I mean, I think at his height, when they were playing that, shipping up to Boston, it was as electric as you could get. I don't think the guy is that necessarily that bright, and I don't think he's that nice. You know what I mean? I don't think he's a great guy. But I'm all here for trolling. I think it's kind of hysterical, but I wonder what the reaction is in the clubhouse. I mean, he's not even like close to, I mean, does he do Red Sox games for Nesson? I mean, I don't even know.
I don't think anybody wants to attach them to him at all. I mean, I just don't get it. He's kind of like the next Curt Schilling. Like, he's taking the baton from Schilling or something, and he just has to pop in here and run his mouth here and there. I don't know. I wonder what John Rocker would have been like with social media.
Well, I was going to say, like, he's sort of like a rocker. Who was the comp you used before? Oh, Schilling. He's got a little rocker in him, too, because, I mean, mispronouncing his name is borderline racist.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, it really is. And so, I don't know. I mean, to give him time is one thing. You know, it's one of those things where he sort of was our guy, so I have to have his back just a little bit, but I don't think he's a good dude. So, but I think it's funny. I mean, Stan, go just on content alone. Forget about the delivery mechanism. He's not wrong. You know what I mean? But why is he bothering to chime in is ultimately the point. It's to stir the pot and keep his name out there 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, Brian Cashman came out and said this. So, and he actually took some heat from that. I mean, it wasn't like he took heat from Yankee fans, because Yankee fans knew it. He just took heat because that's what the media wanted to talk about. Right. And at the time, and I think Stanton, you know, there was a little bit of animosity there, but obviously Stanton in the back of his mind is probably thinking the same thing the whole season, you know, like, oh crap, I made it through another game. Good. I made it through another game. It's tough. I really worry about the fact that even if it's a mild strain, that, you know, that's like a 2 week, maybe 3 week thing for like a normal player, like a younger player. I had a bad feeling this could be something like it could linger into like a 6 week thing with him.
Well, what happens with, I mean, listen, I'm no doctor, but I've been watching this stuff for a long time, as you have. And as an quote unquote ex athlete, with the hamstring, it's a little different than, like, sometimes they'll say it about a shoulder, like, you can't hurt it more, so if you can play, you can play. Well, the hamstring, if it's not 100% healed, one movement can send you back to the beginning, right? So you have to actually have it fully healed, because those things can linger.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And those are the things. That's why they put the time, you know, whether it's a month or 2 months or whatever, because you can't come back before it's 100%.
It's being said right now that they're guessing 4 weeks with him, but I would go on the higher side of that. I mean, yeah, you're right, Brian. Hamstrings are no joke, and especially even though he's just a DH, he has to be running the bases, and he has to use those legs to hit, too, even though it looks like he hits a lot of all-arm. But, you know, he's a force of the lineup. 18 home runs this year, batting mid-200s.
You got to pitch to him. Like, so he's just another bat that you got to pitch to, which helps out Judge and maybe hopefully helps out the other guys. So, I mean, he's an important part of that, you know, 1 through 9. There's no doubt about it. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shack, but this is episode 157 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I mean, listen, the note about the Red Sox is pretty simple. They're playing slightly above expectations, especially a team they're actually still below 500 at home. So, I mean, they should be in an even better position, because to me it's like, for an above 500 team to be below 500 home is just inexcusable, especially Fenway. And my theory on it actually is that it's not as big a home field because of all the clowns that come visit from Iowa. But the bottom line is that they're slightly exceeding expectations, and which makes me, if you want a referendum on how much you should support the Boston Red Sox, and I'm talking directly to my nephew Jacob again, it's the trade deadline. Because if they're in this position heading into the deadline and they don't upgrade the team, I don't know how you can support them. You know, I honestly don't. I mean, they're basically in the hunt for a wild card spot.
Oh, yeah. And as we speak right now, they're tied for the third wild card spot with Kansas City. I mean,
right. And but they, you know, they were not too far out last year at this, you know, this time either. And they did zip. And if they don't, if they're in this position, and by that position, I mean, and we didn't even touch on the fact that one of the best teams in baseball right now is the Houston Astros, and they've clawed their way all the way back. But if they're within 3 games and 2 teams of the last wild card spot, they have to upgrade. And if they don't, I don't know if I'm going to quit the podcast, because I might.
Yeah,
I really might.
It's going to be a telling time for Red Sox organization in general. Like, we recently talked about how the president only gave him like a 1 in 20 chance of making it for the postseason. But you are absolutely right, Brian, 100%. If they don't do something, the fan base is just going to be irate. I mean, there's no other thing you can say. Like, if you are in within three games and the way you are playing now, well over expectations that anybody expected, right? So why not go for it? Why not?
I mean, you know, it's been hard to draw me in this year in general. I mean, it's going to take a little bit more, like this record at the end of July maybe, but I will be just despondent. And this, you know, because this is a tough time of year for sports fans if you're not into baseball. Let's just be honest. I mean, this is it. This is baseball's time to shine, because there's nothing to compete with it. And, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised by this, you know, long list of guys that I hardly know who they are.
Yeah.
Casas is going to come back soon, and that'll help. And
they need pitching. They need pitching and maybe another bat, but definitely some pitching. But yeah, hopefully Casas can shore it up a little bit when he gets back. But again, anybody coming back from injury, you never know. That's why I'm so freaked out about Cole. You know, it's like,
I'm less freaked out about Cole, because like, historically, what happens is, and this is why baseball is such an amazing game, because like, the mental strength of these guys is insane. Because pitchers, they tend to, it's like this, they have to struggle and figure it out, and it's how they get off the mat. And you know what? Like, in a month, when he pitches a 3-hit complete game shutout, you'll be like, he's back. I just feel like he's gonna suffer, and then at the end of that, he'll figure it out and he'll be fine. I mean, I don't like them. I don't like the Yankees, but I wouldn't push the panic button unless he's like, if he's 4 starts from now and still scuffling and he says he feels fine, then you should be worried.
Yeah, I get a little nervous that the pitch count wasn't up higher by the time he came into the majors, because, you know, his first start was okay. You know, it was okay for a first start, you know, but his pitch count wasn't high. And his last start, you know, 4 innings, 7 hits, 6 runs, 4 walks, you know, the walks kill you. He'll ran into the same thing with against the Mets. You know, anytime you walk players, I don't care if it's Little League, Major Leagues, Softball League, Beer League, that comes back to haunt you every time. You cannot walk people. And that's what Gerrit Cole wasn't doing. And then what is he doing now? Giving up home runs, too. And every Yankee fan's thinking, oh, great, here comes 2022 Gerrit Cole again, where he just loves giving up home runs. So I'm a little nervous about the control. I'm not so much worried about the velocity because, you know, you can say he dialed it back to get the control, but when you dialed it back and you weren't getting the control, that's what kind of scares me. So, you know, TBD, I hope you're right, Brian, but, you know, anytime you're coming back from these elbow injuries, and like you said, he is a competitor, so he's probably not going to tell you that he's hurt. You know what I mean?
Any other thoughts on your mind before we say goodbye?
You know, I think, you know, we should talk maybe a little bit about the trade deadline, other than the fact that, you know, like, what could we go out and get? I mean, everyone gets so excited about the Garrett Crochets and like the Luis Roberts and the Vladimir Guerrero Juniors. It's the problem is you know, I said this over and over again, the Orioles are in such a great position with the depth of their minor league system that they can out-tax everybody across the board when it comes to who they can deal. And the Yankees are in a position now, and the fans are rabid because they've been struck in a drought for so long to be in this world, in a World Series, and they have, you know, a team based on the record now and the, you know, the core that can do it, and they are going to get raked over the coals like you wouldn't believe in any trade aspect that comes their way. And if you don't think any team's not going to be asking for Spencer Jones and the Martian, even though he's hurt, it's going to happen. And if the Yankees don't want to part with one of those guys, they're not going to be able to keep pace with the Orioles. They just will not. It's not going to happen.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If Guerrero wants to do DHing, maybe he goes to Baltimore, but he's a perfect fit in New York, right? I mean, he's a perfect fit in New York. He's not a perfect fit for the Orioles.
Right.
So that's a name that I think makes a lot of sense that's getting floated, because
the Orioles need pitching, and the fact that they can deal tons of prospects for it scares the heck out of me.
I mean, and you should be nervous. I mean, you know, even if the teams don't change a bit, I mean, the Orioles can very easily catch the New York Yankees in the stand. But I think in terms of like a playoff run, you know, in terms of bats, I actually think Guerrero, at first blush, I'm like, oh, God, they need another like big bopper. And the truth is, like, they're not getting production out of first. So why not?
Yeah.
So,
but I had heard someone say that they would have to part with Jones and Dominguez to get Guerrero. And even though Guerrero, you get him for next year, I don't know if that's a price you pay. And you think that guy is going to get you over the actual hump when you have so many other holes. You know, is that the price you want to pay for him? But again, I think they're going to have to part with one or both of those guys to do what they need to do.
Yeah, that's why you have the minor league system. Unless, and if they don't, then you know that either they might not feel like they have a World Series team. I always read into that stuff too much, but that's sort of my take on it. Because you develop prospects to play them, and you develop prospects to trade them. And those are the only two things you use them for. And the Yankees, believe it or not, have done, I think they've, I mean, Volpe is better than I expected. I didn't think he'd be this good.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. We'll have a good one. This is episode 157 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry.